Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today, once again, our guest is Rick Solis. Rick is a fellow investor, appraiser for the Norris Group hard money loan business, and occasionally a co-teacher within our boot camps. Rick, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about investing. When we talked a little bit about you thought it was a priority to get in and buy something, and you got it done at 20 years in 1 week. What did you do with that house?
You know, that house was in Montclair. It was on Princeton Street in Montclair, and I held that all the way from to the top and sold that and 1031 exchanged that into something else and totally lost it all.
Oh.
But I had refied and pulled out the bulk of my money along the way, but there was that last 100 grand profit was something I 1031 into, and by the time I sold that investment, it was a wash.
Well, what did you end up paying for that property?
I think the house in Montclair, I paid, it was just under $100,000. It was in 1988, right before the boom was really taken off.
Yeah.
And I think I sold it for about $450,000, and I owed probably $250,000 on that, and I had the tenant that had been there like 15 years, I had them equity split deal with them where they made the payments and we split the profit, so we each walked out with about $100,000.
And you had that arrangement with them for 15 years?
Yeah, it was quite a while because the payment was a little high at the time, and I was, you know, still young, and I just got married, and I couldn't shoulder that thing. And it was in the early to mid '90s when the market was just tanking. So I worked that out with them. Hey, you guys keep it fixed, and you make the payment, and we'll just split it when we sell it.
How did you get the loan in the first place? You're 20 years old.
Well, that was 1988, and as I mentioned, I'd read the Robert Allen books.
Yeah.
Which, ethics aren't high on, you know, back then in those books. So,
uh-oh.
You know, I met a realtor. It was a HUD repo, and he sent me to his tax guy, his loan guy, and before he knew it, I was buying a house.
Okay.
It was 1988, and I was 20, though.
Okay. Yeah, no, I understand. There was a lot of helpful people back then, and I think a lot of investors almost didn't have a clue what was going on behind the scenes. But when you sold it, that was a creative solution. So that's, I think, do you think reading those books kind of made you think out of the box more often than not?
Absolutely. I mean, they really helped me a lot, and I appreciate them now. However, I don't do any of the stuff in those books anymore. I'm not really into the creative financing, trading. You know, I'm really into just get it below market and figure out the financing later.
Getting it below market gives you a lot of options where when you buy something that's creative, you don't have an option of having equity anyway.
No, you're getting great terms, but, you know, you're stuck with something that you owe 100% of what it's worth.
When did we first meet?
We met at a Nick Manfredi's meeting. The first time you spoke there, you went there and you took in a tape set and you had a couple of, you think you had four buying systems, and I think you brought two of them with you there, and you're offering a deal, and I bought those two when you were selling them there, and I liked them so much, I think I the next day I started stalking whoever at your office was selling them back then, and I drove to your office like 2 days later and bought the other two. And that was probably 2002, 2001, I don't know, whenever Nick's club started.
Okay, yeah, that was way back then.
Interestingly, I kind of put it together, two and two. I had approached you with the deal a few months before that to try to sell it to you, and that didn't work out so well. I think our conversation was about 30 seconds.
Oh.
Describe what I had, and you just said, no, I wouldn't be interested in that.
I had a similar conversation this morning. Maybe I need to be more lengthy in my decision process.
Well, I mean, this was, you know, it was five units in downtown San Bernardino. And
yeah, that was a quick no answer from my experience. What you probably wouldn't know is that I had dealt with a pile of fourplexes in that area, probably just gotten rid of it. So when you said five units in San Bernardino, yeah, I pushed the off button real fast.
Yeah, that was quick. So. I had those same kind of conversations as a buyer a few years later, though. There was stuff I was turning down left and right.
Yeah, you just get used to what your niche is and say, nah, nothing else. It's a funny sideline. There's an area in in Moreno Valley that we bought a lot of fourplexes in the 90s. And we were buying them for 60 and selling them for 139, and lo and behold, they got up to 600 grand.
Wow.
There's one that opened a bid today at a trustee sale for $1.
Oh, you should have bid 60 on that just to see. You did it again.
Well, Greg called me up. He said, look at this, and it's the same fourplex that we probably owned, 15 years ago.
And did he follow it to see where it sold?
It hadn't gone to sale yet. It's probably still pending. So, but you know what's bad or good, depending. Those things domino all around the neighborhood. I mean, you start having those things go for 150 grand. I guarantee you that most of those people owe over 400 on them. And there's no way.
I've noticed a lot of towns now just seem like they just tear them down. I mean, once they become vacant, they rip them down to the ground.
Well, San Bernardino is famous for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's whole neighborhoods where there used to be 100 fourplexes, and now there's like three of them, and just a bunch of vacant lots with driveways.
Yeah, I owned them in there. That's why when you called me with five units, I said, no, I remember that too well. I had a very funny listing. There was a listing agent that had a listing of a fourplex in that area, and her comment was, investor delight, not many left on the block like this one. And I just thought that was a classic because it was the only one they hadn't torn down on that cul-de-sac.
Yeah, there's nothing delightful about four units in San Bernardino with four sets of tenants. I've been down that path, and there's no delight there.
No, that would be a tough. If you owned a bunch of those, I wouldn't want to be a owner of rental property. That's for sure. There was a later seminar that I don't remember the year we taught it, but you attended it, and I had mentioned that I thought there were still some oomph left in our boom, and you met Andrea then?
No, Andrea had a bookstore in downtown Laverne. It was a books on tape store, and this was like 2002 or 3.
Okay.
And I used to go in there all the time, and I mean, she had every book and tape set available in there. You could rent it for like $5, like a Blockbuster. So I met her there. That was probably 2003.
Okay. And you attended one of the events we did together and ended up doing some stuff.
No, I was going to your stuff. I was attending all your stuff, and she every time I go in the rent stuff, she'd ask me, "Well, what are you doing now?" And I would tell her, and I was trying all kinds of stuff. I was still doing appraisals. I had been doing investing for like 20 years, but nothing substantial. And I was selling insurance. I was trying all kinds of stuff because I just wanted to get out of the appraisal business. So I finally started really focusing on investing more, and I took your boot camp, and I told her about it. So that's when she got interested, and she took your boot camp. And the boot camp back then was fairly basic if you knew stuff about appraisal or investing, but it really showed you exactly a blueprint and exactly what to do to buy houses. And I already knew all that stuff, but she didn't. So when she went to that boot camp, I had all the knowledge, but she had the desire to actually just hit that hard. And so that's how that worked out. I mean, I've always known how to do it. I just get lazy, or I don't follow through, or I lose track and do something else, but she's focused like a laser beam. So
okay,
she hit that hard. I mean, for somebody one day knew nothing about buying houses, and 6 months later she owns 20 of them. I mean, we were just I was doing a deal a year before I started partnering up with her.
So she put it on overdrive. Now, what was the methodology for finding deals at that time?
Back then, it was a letter campaign. Before, I was just running an ad in the paper, and whenever a realtor I met had a deal, I'd pick something up like that. But ads in the paper is how I got my stuff. With her, it was a letter campaign, and where I would have done maybe 100 letters a week just by myself, just occasionally sending them out. I think we got up to like 1,000 letters a week. I mean, we were just doing a massive mailer at one point, and we were averaging 4 to 6 houses a month just on that letter campaign, and we were getting half a dozen calls a day.
And who was picking up the phone calls?
Both of us. And that worked to our advantage because we didn't realize this at the time, but there's a huge segment of the population that owns property that don't want to do business with a man, and then there's another segment that don't want to do business with a woman. So it worked out to our advantage because you know, we seemed to nail all of that. Well, there was a lot of times we were buying stuff where the seller did not want to communicate with Andrea, and then there was other times where they just didn't want to have anything to do with me, and it just worked to our benefit.
How do you know who's supposed to have the original conversation?
We had two different names and two different phone numbers on each letter, mine and hers.
That's, well, what a simple solution.
So, yeah, it worked out great.
So they chose, and they were happy from the beginning.
Yeah, well, and then there, it almost worked to another thing, too, because I was more cut and dry, like, well, this is, you know, kind of like you do it. This is what you got. This is what I'm willing to pay. Here you go. There's my offer. Where she was more of a, you know, she can sell anything to anybody. I mean, there was one time we were buying a house. The house in Fontana worth $120,000. We went there and met those people in person. I think we paid $60,000, and those people were giving her hugs as we were walking out the door. And I was like, "My God, I can't believe this!" But I saw that happen quite a few times. I mean, she could probably, you know, vacation with all these people we bought houses for 50 cents on the dollar to this day.
That's interesting. That sounds like a female version of Tony Alvarez.
Exactly.
That's, you know, that's more than a technique. That's, I think she cares about people.
Absolutely. It's not even her technique. It just comes natural, and I just don't have that ability.
Yeah. No, I'm, you know, I get liked by people, but sometimes, you know, you look at people like that, and they just get loved by people. And I understand, my best friend Alex is like that. He is best friends with somebody we actually bought a house from. And I just thought it was a house, and this guy's gone on vacation with him for the last decade. So,
that's
just
funny.
That's interesting. Now, when did you start noticing a change in the marketplace, and did your letter campaign start showing you that things were changing?
And I would say it got progressively harder the longer we did it. So that's why we ramped up from 100 a week to 200 a week to 1,000 a week. When we started in 2003, it seemed like it was almost shooting fish in a barrel. Like, you can get them no problem. By 2006, it was so difficult to get them. I think the only one I did in 2006, we maybe did four or five, which now is a blessing now that we look back on it. But four or five for the year versus four or five for the month. And by 2007, the letter campaign wasn't even paying for itself, so we couldn't even buy enough stuff to flip and even cover just the mailing costs. So we stopped in 2007.
What did you do with the properties that you bought?
The ones we started buying in about 2005 and 6, we started getting spooked. So we flipped most of the stuff we had, but we did keep a couple in 2006. And then there was one that we flipped to you, and you, you auctioned that off. And that
That's
was
right.
Probably our best deal in 2006.
It was certainly the best deal at the auction for me.
Yeah.
I forgot all about that. You know, that was a strange experience. We really thought we were going to get in the auction business, and we really busted our butts, and it was a complete flop. And I remember you feeling bad for me because I had that long look on my face.
Yeah, I felt really bad for you. And I remember how much effort, because part of the deal was we marketed that property for you in the auction. So we were out there wearing the Norris Group shirts, and we'd spent, you know, half a day putting signs all over to get people to this auction.
Yeah.
We must have met 100 people over the course of 2 days, and I think two of them showed up, you know, to bid. I mean, it was just, not good.
I'll never forget that day. I remember looking at my sons, and I told them, I said, you know what? I've never been more proud of an effort of a failure. You know, in other words, we didn't get the result, but we can't look at our effort and go, we missed out.
No,
on something.
You put a massive effort. I mean, you must have had, you know, 500 of those signs between all those properties, and a lot of open houses, and a lot of it was a lot of work. And we just did one property. You guys did like 30 or 40. So
we had too many. It was two, and maybe that was it. I don't know. Looking back at the end of the boom, you know, what would you have done differently?
At the end of the boom, I got pretty cocky because, you know, along with everybody, like, oh, this is easy. So what I did, where I messed up was I got so concerned with, and I saw this happen to a lot of people, not paying taxes, you know, don't pay taxes. So I started 1031-ing into a lot of properties that I shouldn't have, and I started just getting in all kinds of other investments, and I just kept investing too long. What I would do next time was, and I did take a lot of chips off the table, but I, you know, the half of the chips that I didn't take off the table and I kept investing in, pretty much all that's all gone.
Yeah.
Now I'm stuck with a bunch of properties with no equity, and I'm going to be riding those out for, 5 to 8 years just to get my, all my money back out of them. So what I would do next time is just sell them, pay the taxes, and live happily ever after.
Now, your current plan, how are you attracting properties, or you're buying properties? How are you finding them?
We find almost everything through the MLS. There are agents. Whenever we've done business with an agent, they will seem to bring us more business afterwards. So there are so many investors out there, and it's a huge percentage. I would say it's probably 3/4 of them. We'll put in offers on properties, and they don't close. And it's really starting to tarnish the image for all investors now. I mean, there's some agents that don't even want to take our offers because we're an investor that probably is not going to close. So when we do get something and we close, the first transaction, the second one, is always way easier. So we have agents bringing us stuff, but for the most part, I just look at the, whatever listings are available in my market. I'll drive by 10 or 15 of them and write up offers on most of them, and that seems to be what generates the deals. I mean, agents bringing us stuff, brings a couple deals, here and there, but actually going out there and looking at properties and writing offers seems to be the big thing.
And you're spending what percentage of your time right now doing that?
I do it one day a week. I think Andrew's doing 2 or 3 days a week. I'm doing one day a week, and we're averaging 3 properties a month.
Okay. And the intent is to resell or to hold?
We're holding 2/3 of them as rentals with the intent to sell not at the top of the market, but on the way up, getting close to the top. But I will be exiting the market way before the top this time. And I will probably go from 50 rentals down to 0 and never own another one. I mean, 25 years of being a landlord is enough for me. I don't see the big, big excitement about that, why everyone loves that so much.
That's interesting. We just had somebody that does a buy-sell business and done it pretty successfully. We just talked to, and yeah, he just never, once he experienced that, he didn't want that again. Now, you're up in the high desert, so Victorville, Apple Valley, they got to have a 20% unemployment rate. Who's your tenant?
Well, that's where we're doing most of the buy and hold, because there's almost no resale stuff up there. So, I mean, even if we wanted to buy them, fix them, sell them, it'd be a 4-month journey to make $10,000, and we'd each make, $5,000. So
right,
that stuff we're just renting. But there's a huge, huge population up there that, husband and wife each make $10 an hour, and they've been renters forever, and they probably will be renters forever. And, I mean, they're content with that, and that's typically our renter. A lot of them have bad credit, no bankruptcies or evictions. And we just end up getting a 2-month deposit out of them, and it works out pretty well. I mean, we have to go through, I'm sure Andrea looks at 40 or 50 tenants before we get the one good one, but,
wow.
Yeah. We get them, and we constantly have rentals available, so her phone's ringing off the hook for people wanting to rent.
Now, she's the one that does all of that?
Yeah, she's almost got like a sixth sense when she meets someone. She can almost tell if, that's going to work out. I don't know how she does that. I do not have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems to work really well for her. I mean, she can meet them, go see their house, run their application. She, calls her employer. She talks to their other landlords, and she can just get a feel for if that's the right one or not.
So it seems like the pairing of you two has really worked out for both of you.
Worked out phenomenal, because we're opposite in so many ways, and there's just so many things that I'm just not willing to do that she's phenomenal at, and there's a lot of things that I'm pretty good at that she doesn't like doing.
Did you expect that this was going to work out this well, or is this something they just go, wow, I'm really surprised?
I'm really surprised. I'm really surprised, too, that she had to talk me into it after 2007 and 8. I was like, no, I'm so done with that. I'm not doing that anymore. And she kept buying and kept buying. And last year, she probably bought a half dozen deals without me. And I looked at them, I was like, she bought those at the bottom of the market and got screaming deals. She talked me into it. So I started again. I think we started in December. And I'm just surprised that we were able to get that going. I mean, so well. We're literally got it going as good as we were back in like 2003 and 4 and 5. And it's a completely different business now. It's nothing like it was back then.
There's no cost. I mean, you got an MLS instead of a mailing campaign.
Yeah, but it was so much easier to just deal with owners back then. And, I mean, it was it was just different. And when you had your property, once you got one, it was like a nugget of gold. You can get rid of that in a heartbeat, and you can get it closed in 30 days with anybody that would be willing to buy it. Now it's such a challenge to resell it, it's almost not worth the journey to even try. It's just better to just rent them till things ease up. And I think they will ease up in a few years.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, your exit plan next time is to sell in exchange or to sell in cash in?
The way we're structuring it is my retirement account pays cash for the house. She takes title. My retirement account pays cash. Then she refinances with the Norris Group and gets back probably 70 to 80% of what we've got into the property. And then my retirement account holds a second for the difference. And then my retirement account has an option for 50% of the equity. So works out great for her. She's got nothing in it. Works out great for me. I'm getting a return on my money, you know, with the second that I'm carrying. And then I'm also getting half of the proceeds when we sell it.
Yeah. Now, how long have you been investing in real estate in the IRA?
Probably started in about 2000. I was mainly buying mortgages in my IRA. And then, probably about 2003 or 4, I started, you know, dabbling in houses a little bit.
Okay.
So I've been doing real estate transactions through my IRA, if you count note buying, from about 2000.
What's your target property for a rental? What's too big as far as a house? What's too big as far as a yard, let's say?
Well, up in Hesperia, or in Hesperia, Victorville, the high desert, it seems like almost everything comes with a half acre. And I really don't like those big lots because those tenants up there seem to acquire a lot of junk.
They can store a lot of stuff. That's why I asked the question. I've had them.
That's just the way it is up there. So I really don't want anything over half acre. But even with a half acre, I mean, that's a lot of tractors and broken Sea-Doos and lots of cars and refrigerators and lawnmowers and stuff in their backyard. But we've so far been able to avoid those kind of tenants this time around.
Okay, but you are saying okay to a half acre lot, though. In Apple Valley, you'd have no choice.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, most of the inventory so is a half acre. So that's what we're getting. I prefer not to own a rental property that's a two-story. I don't want any rentals with a pool. I don't want anything really built before 1978. And I would prefer stuff from like 1,000 square feet to maybe 1,800 square feet.
Okay. How many offers would you say you're writing to end up with a house?
Up in the high desert, it's probably 10 offers to one house. Down like Rialto, Fontana, Corona type areas, it's probably more like 50 to 1. I mean, it's a lot of offers to get something down here.
You said you're driving by. Are you doing repair estimates after the yes answer, so you have a look-see period?
No, and I think that's where most investors are getting a bad name. I think most investors are writing offers without going to see this stuff. But we're writing our offers after we've seen them and kind of worked out a repair estimate. And that's how we've been doing it. And so once we get in escrow, we're not backing out. We never back out. We close everything.
We've got about a minute and a half. You've watched other business models of other investors. What have you seen that you go, I like that. I'd like to replicate some of that.
I like Tony Alvarez's a lot, just because he gets properties to cash flow. And that's the thing. I mean, we're getting these things to where they cover all the expenses and have a couple $100 left over to cover maintenance and vacancy. And that's the one I like the most. I don't like the buying, fixing, and selling in this environment just because it's just so difficult. I mean, we're doing it now. I think we've got three or four of those going on. But it's so difficult to get to the finish line with a first-time buyer, an FHA loan, and two appraisals and a review appraisal. And, you know, the banks really don't want to lend on that stuff, so they're making it as difficult as possible.
Yep, since I deal with about 30 or so of those all the time, at least Greg does.
You probably got better buyers than the first-time buyers.
Intentionally now. Yeah, once we've – it's always change. You look at the model and say, okay, the rules have changed. I have to tweak my model. So, well, Rick, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking time, and you've always been really helpful in our boot camps and probably really one of the things that people enjoy most.
Thank you very much.
All right, Rick. Thanks a lot for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.